Good morning, and welcome to Lopes on Movies. My name is Joey Lopes, and today I am joined by Connor.
Good morning, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't really have a good idea for the intro of this one. Not that I ever do anything particularly special, but I don't know. I guess the uhs and ums wasn't really that good of a bit.
Not the best.
I don't know. Maybe next week I'll hit you with something a little bit better, a little bit more creative. But I mean, we are under the wire right here. We're recording this very late, through nobody's fault but mine, really. And you know, that's totally fine. That's totally fine. You know, I've never put the blame on anybody else. Ultimately, this is on me. I'm also coming exceptionally unprepared. I have not seen a movie in quite a long time. But Connor, you have. You've been doing your due diligence, and thank God for that, because where would we be without at least one of us watching movies on this this movie review show? My God.
Yeah, well, right.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have that much else to say. Like, there's not really any movie news going on right now. I guess,
The strikes are still going.
The strike's still going on. I know Drew Barrymore has gotten in a lot of hot water because she said she's bringing back her podcast. Or I guess it's not a podcast. I guess it's a show. But it's, like, a talk show or something.
So I think there's, like, a weird gray area where I guess a podcast is still okay.
And well, apparently, like,
isn't considered crossing the line.
I think that SAG said she was in the clear, but I think that she's still not in the clear with the Writers Guild, so there's some ambiguity there. But ultimately, I think what she's doing is probably considered by most to be, you know, a little not great.
I don't really understand what is and isn't. So apparently, Tim Heidecker and Greg Turkington did a podcast on cinema.
Oh yeah, I read that.
And that was considered okay. You know, and they, you know, obviously on cinema, they play like characters of themselves,
yeah.
Like who
yeah.
are these wacky film critics who barely know anything about movies. You know, and it's kind of funny because with us talking about this, you know, not that we know anything either, but like it's a bit like they talk about a movie and then they're like, oh, I liked it. No, it's really good. And then Greg will just make weird comparison stuff. But that apparently what they're doing with that podcast is not. Like they even made like a whole thing about how that does not count as you know, crossing the line or anything.
But they're not allowed to actually make the show on cinema at the cinema,
right?
Because some of the writers on that, like their director Eric Noter Nicola, I think is his name. He's in the guild, so he's in the Writers Guild or whatever. So he can't work on cinema. So they can't make that. But I guess. They can do their podcast bit. I don't know.
But since it's like improv stuff where they're just playing characters, there's no writing because they're both writers too.
So sure.
That's always one of those things. It's like a gray area to me. So I guess that's why podcasting can be kind of safe.
Yeah, but I do think that Drew Barrymore's thing is like a show though. Like the show has writers. So I think that her doing this is... You know, a little, not great.
Seems a little questionable.
The writer's strike, but that's really the only thing I've seen movie news wise. Because I mean, the strike's going on. There's nothing to talk about really. You know, what can you do? You know, we'll see when we get out of this. But I mean, I've seen no evidence to suggest that we're anywhere close to a resolution here.
Right. Yep. Oh well.
Oh well.
At least
indeed.
We still got some movies.
Yeah, so I know that there's a movie called The Nun 2 in theaters right now. One of my coworkers was going to see that today. I guess that's the sequel to The Nun.
I guess so.
And the movie you saw is also a sequel, but this is a second sequel.
That's
you
right.
You could call that a threequel or the third in the series.
Yeah, number three. I was between that. The one I saw, the Nun, you know, it was a tough choice.
Yeah, but, I know. There's just so much to see in theaters right now. There really is.
Yep.
I say that as a joke, but now I'm actually curious. Like, what is there to see in theaters? Like, if I wanted to go to the movies tomorrow, what could I see? My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. Right. Another threequel. But not the one you saw.
No.
Yeah, this is pretty dire. Oh, boy. anyway, so you saw The Equalizer 3, correct?
That's right.
You just saw it, too. Like, you're like, hot off the presses, like, basically just got home from seeing it.
I did. That's right. Yeah, just got home from it.
All right, well, tell me a little bit about The Equalizer 3. Like, what's going on here?
All right, sure. So, The Equalizer 3, it's directed by Antoine Fuqua. Are you familiar with this director, Joey?
He's the guy who did Training Day, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's I've never seen it. I mean, that's, to me, from what I remember, that's his, like, real movie that people, like, it was kind of like an entry-level IMDb top 100 movie back in the day.
Yep.
But I've never seen it, but that's the reputation that it's had. But he's kind of made a lot of kind of junk over the past, you know, like more recent years, like all these Equalizer movies. I think he made the Magnificent Seven remake. Do you remember that?
That's right. He has done that. So he is a bit of a director for hire kind of guy. But the one thing that you can respect about him is that he's not trying to make some kind of crazy piece that has all these messages and everything. Like, he's making just popcorn movie masses entertained by action movie guy. That's mainly what he is. And he also works, just like Training Day. He works with Denzel a lot. Obviously, these Equalizer movies. Denzel Washington is the star. And he's had other collaborations with him too. I think he's a pretty competent action filmmaker. I do think that he makes decent-ish movies. Like, and nothing like totally groundbreaking, you know, going to change your film-going life. Mm-hmm, but they are passable and competent and well shot movies that have some interesting
stuff. Well, we need those.
Like,
you know, every once in a while we need those kind of things. But is Equalizer 3, like, does that live up to the hype?
Yeah, so I've never seen any of these Equalizer movies, so I went in cold, and I think anyone could. I don't think you need to know the background of Equalizer Man. So
God,
I guess the
not.
Other thing too, I think the Equalizer is based off of a show. From,
oh yeah, like a really old show. Yeah,
like the probably longer ago, the 60s, I think, right?
Yeah, I have no idea, but I know that there was a show, and that was based on. There's also like a Queen Latifah show that's airing, like, I don't know, now, like relatively recently.
Oh,
that was
right.
Also
The Equalizer.
Where she was the Equalizer
show,
this time. so they're making a lot of Equalizer content out there for all the Equalizer heads.
Right. Okay. So like, I'll give you like the idea of the Equalizer. So it stars Denzel Washington, who plays Robert McCall, who is a former government like assassin, basically, who decides he's retiring and he's going to just help people who are in bad situations. And then he always it always ends up turning into some much bigger plot.
Naturally,
he's just doing some small thing that he thinks, and then it turns into some he's knocking over, a terrorist cell or something. Whatever. Like that's the framework of these movies. So it's very Mission Impossible-y, like a similar-ish kind of thing.
So does
feeling.
He like is
like
he
man
working
with no
for
name?
Like
he's like
regular,
a ghost agent.
Is he working for like the regular people out there, or is he being hired by who's hiring him, and like what kind of situation?
He's just regular people, or he's just doing his own thing, or he just
okay.
Sees
so like a regular person will be like, I have this problem, and I need
even,
somebody with
like
a certain set of skills.
That. It's almost like he kind of like just stumbles into these kind of things.
Oh, okay. So he's just kind of looking for trouble almost.
Well, he's trying to help people.
Right, but like he's looking for things. More. He's looking for people to help. Like he's not being sought out.
At least that's what I gather from this installment of the series.
That's
I think there
fine.
Might be
that's
more
fine.
Else going on from the other ones, but yeah, that's the case in this one. And he's like a total John Wick style,
right?
Like,
he's an
assassin.
Indestructible
he's like,
action hero, particular set of skills, whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this kind of archetype has been around forever, and it does play pretty well. Like, you know, how many, what were those movies that you know, Richard Bronson movies, right? Like they made,
oh, the, what was it, Death Wish?
Death Wish, is that, yeah, the Death Wish movies. They made like 19 of those movies, and he was old during those ones, so that, you know, still works, you know, as violent. And they're like, this one, extremely violent. Like he's, you know, you got people getting whacked, people getting wasted in this.
People getting wasted in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, so very violent. So the story of this one is our lead Denzel, Robert McCall, is in southern Italy, where he discovers, let me read the IMDb description. He discovers his friends are under the control of local crime bosses. As events turn deadly, McCall knows what he has to do: become his friend's protector by taking on the mafia.
But what's he doing in Ireland? Is that
Italy?
Oh, yeah, sorry, I heard that.
Italy.
So what is he doing there? Is he just on vacation?
No, so the movie starts with he's taking on some other case and then kind of stumbles into this area, and the case brings him to Italy. So you're just kind of thrown right into it, and the next thing you know, he's in Italy. But okay. No, he is an American. That's abroad. But he also knows everything because he was a former government agent. He has a black book of every number that he can call a CIA agent right away, and you know, and get them on the phone and then have them look into something. So he's like, you know, trying to do good, but he's also like a crazy assassin who's kind of like a little bit nuts.
Oh, sure.
I would think like he's, you gotta a little be bit, if you're he's a little bit awesome. Off. Like he's trying to be like do well and try to just be happy and just like and like peaceful, but whenever he sees people, his friends that are under fire, he goes, you know, he goes at him, and then you know, it's John Wick style of but I mean, obviously very toned down because Denzel is not, you know, he's an older guy, so he's not jumping and doing all the kind of crazy choreography that you'd get from like a Keanu Reeves or anything. But the action is still pretty good, passable. And Denzel, he's doing a great job in it. The actors are mostly like Italian actors in this one, since it was set in Italy. It's actually filmed most of it on the Amalfi Coast, so it's beautiful too. Like the architecture, everything that you're seeing is super, super nice. So that part is good about it also. Story, very formulaic, but, you know, the characters are charismatic enough, and it's, you know, it's not bad. For a pop-in, you know, how long this? Hour and 49 minutes? It's not bad. Dakota Fanning's in it, too.
Oh, wow.
Which apparently has some kind of tie-in to Equalizer 1 or Equalizer 2, which I didn't see, but there's some kind of tie in there, I guess, a little bit, but
not about that.
I knew anything about it, but it didn't affect my enjoyment of the movie at all. You can go right to Equalizer 3 and be perfectly happy with it. It is very violent and very violent at the beginning.
I will say that the idea of, you know, the Equalizer goes to Italy and is like around like Roman architecture and stuff sounds fun.
Yeah, oh, it's great. Yeah, it's. I think that's what they're going to keep doing. Like, they'll just keep making these movies, and the Equalizer will go to Rome. The Equalizer will go to, you know, Moscow. The Equalizer will go to wherever. And that's,
I mean, at this point, like, it's so interesting, because, like, back in, like the Death Wish days, like, the Death Wish movies, sure, are a similar concept, but they're not tied to any intellectual property. Whereas now it's like, this is basically the same idea, but they take the Equalizer intellectual property because people recognize that, I guess, from the 60s or whenever this show was from. And now that's what we end up with is, you know, Equalizer movies in fulfilling this role.
Yeah, so, I mean, so this has so little to do, I'm sure, with whatever that original show's was. But
well, especially by now, maybe. I'm sure after three of them that Antoine Fuqua has kind of made it his own thing.
Right. Yeah. It's not bad.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know. I think that sounds like the right kind of movie for, I'm just looking to see something. I'm just looking to go to the movies, if that's something you like to do. That's probably a good one to pop into and just have a, you know, relatively decent time, you know, seeing a movie in the theaters, which I used to do a lot more often, you know. Like, I feel like it's I'm not that, like, that it takes a lot to get me to the movies these days for whatever reason. Like,
that's a shame because, you know, that's what's going to kill the movies.
I know, it's not good. I mean, I always think back to those MoviePass days where it was like, it took nothing to get me to the movies back in the MoviePass days.
Well, like, it also costs you nothing.
Exactly. It's like, I have it here. I'm going to go once a week, no matter what's in theaters. I don't care.
But by the way, the MoviePass is back. I keep getting emails from them about wanting me to sign up. I don't know what the deal is with it, though. I don't know anybody that's done it.
Yeah, that's the scary thing.
I still remember they sent some kind of thing where they're going to track your eyes or something to see where your eyes are fixing on, like, ads or something.
I feel like that must have not gotten off the ground. You know, the technology must not have, I just have a doubt that the eye tracking aspect of the MoviePass app made it into production. That was such a dubious thing to say.
That initial press conference was so weird.
Yeah. Well, the MoviePass CEO guy, like, came out dressed like Steve Jobs at the press conference, which was like an instant bad sign. It's like, oh no, this is what he thinks he's Steve Jobs.
Didn't they do that in the character did that in Silicon Valley?
Yeah. Like the black turtleneck or whatever.
Funny joke. Yeah.
Yeah. If you ever want to look like a blowhard as a tech CEO guy, just come out wearing a black turtleneck. Just us. I don't know. Maybe I have to, like, Google some, like, Reddit accounts of people that have gotten the new MoviePass and whether or not it's whether or not it's viable in today's market. But man, I miss those days. Those were good days. I got to get back into the habit of going to see movies like The Equalizer 3. I feel like I was happier then.
You should. I was perfectly happy watching The Equalizer 3. I'm in a great mood right now.
Well, that's great. I'm very happy to hear that. But I know that this is not the only movie you've seen recently, you know, because we've been talking about an old movie that I'm almost 100% sure that we brought this up on the show before, because I watched this like last year in the spring when I took that class with Professor Leach, the Femme Fatale class. But I know that we talked about the Philip Marlowe books. I know you read The Big Sleep. You haven't watched the movie Big Sleep yet, but
that's right.
After reading that, I recommended that you check out James Cain's novels. A lot of the James Cain novels from the 30s. He was pretty early, but he had been like 30s and 40s. But The Postman Always Rings Twice and Double Indemnity, and of course Double Indemnity is very well known as being the basis for one of the great movies of all time, Double Indemnity. So I know that you read the novel Double Indemnity and then watched the movie.
Finished it in like 2 days.
That's a great novel. You know, that's like but both that and The Postman Always Rings Twice are like 100 pages and they just go down real easy. You just fly through it. Super, super nice read. Just the best. I love his writing. I think he's fantastic. He also wrote Mildred Pierce, which we talked about in the show before.
Only read Double Indemnity, but the way it's totally first person, so you're getting everything from the main character's point of view. So you're getting his inner monologue, everything. So that's the way it's kind of done. It's very different than like a Raymond Chandler style where you get these. Yeah. Vivid description where it's also from like first person, but you get these vivid descriptions of like everything surrounding. In this one, it's more you get his thoughts to himself. I don't know how to describe
it
exactly.
I think it's like Raymond Chandler's prose style in general is very, very descriptive and like has a lot of like comparisons and simile. And he creates this very vivid picture of what's going on. That's like you could say that that's Philip Marlowe doing that, but it's not so much like there's sort of like a vague Chandler and Marlowe are telling the story almost in a way.
Right.
Whereas the James Cain novels are like they're very, very much like first person account of everything. They're like in every respect. And that's one of the things that's kind of cool about them, because the writing style can sometimes be not super like, I don't want to say professional is the word, but they're written from the perspective of the person who's telling the story. And this is really notable in The Postman Always Rings Twice, where the it's very much like the dialect of the person telling the story. And you can really, really tell like what kind of character he is, where he comes from, what he sounds like, and how he thinks, just based on the way that all of the text is written. And that's true of Double Indemnity as well, but slightly less noticeable, just because the character is, I guess it's still noticeable. It's just that the character in Postman is so like, he's just like a drifter type, you know, and he has this very particular way of speaking. It's great. But Double Indemnity is great. And of course, you had to watch the movie, which is a Billy Wilder movie, written and adapted by Raymond Chandler.
Yeah, which is so very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the movie is great. The book is great. Like, they're both different, but just awesome in their own ways. So the story is about a insurance agent who kind of gets, like, seduced, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. by a woman who wants to plan a scheme to open accident insurance on her husband, have him meet an unfortunate end and then take the money. And then basically these two, him being the insurance agent, is tells her, well, there's no way you're going to pull this off. They're
yeah,
lies to everything.
Yeah.
It'll never work. But if you have me on your side and we do it together, we can do it.
Well, yeah, because he thinks he's figured it out. And like, that's one of the cool things in the book is like, he's kind of bored with his life. And this woman, like, not only seduces him like sexually, but also just this like this appealing notion of trying to get away with something that mm-hmm. he thinks he knows so much about, that like the character just becomes so seduced by this notion of like, I can actually pull this off. Can I pull this off? Right. With the knowledge that I have, it becomes like, almost like a game for him. And that, mm-hmm. that's true of the movie as well, of course, but it's just such an interesting aspect of the story, and such a satanic partnership between these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And the book definitely like is darker, especially our, lead character, the femme fatale in mm-hmm. this, Phyllis.
Yeah,
she
Phyllis.
Is, just be like pure evil, really.
Yes.
And it's a little more of a nuanced character, I would say, in, well, is nuance the right word? I'm not sure.
Yeah, but maybe she's
toned
still
down,
like,
I guess, in the movie version.
Only a little bit. I feel like they toned down Phyllis a little bit towards the end of the movie, where they make it a little bit ambiguous what her motivations were, like how she's currently feeling. Whereas I feel like in the novel, I guess the difference is like, were these two characters, did they ever have a real like romantic connection? And I think in the movie, it's a little bit ambiguous where maybe they did, whereas in the novel, I think it's very one-sided, and the main character is basically a sap. That's the impression I get.
I think that's part of it too. And the novel is a little more mystery, I would say,
mm-hmm.
where you don't know all of the facts, and you learn them as our main character is learning them, and it kind mm-hmm. of changes your perspective on the way the story is yeah. being told to you. There's more reveals, I guess. The movie kind of cuts some of that out, and you know kind of everything that's happening as it's going. Mm-hmm. And the big thing that they change in the movie from the novel is making the claims agent in the insurance firm that he works for, Keyes, who is played by Edward Robinson in the film, mm-hmm. a much bigger character, and really like the moral aspect of the movie.
Yeah, sort of the moral center of the movie. Yeah, he's so good in the movie.
Like, and he's tremendous.
Yeah. The three performances from the leads, that'd be Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck and Edward G. Robinson, they're all so good in the movie. It's really one of the great like trios, I feel like, in like classic Hollywood cinema. And the thing that's so funny is like Fred McMurray in the two Billy Wilder movies, it's this and the apartment. He's playing against type as like a very shady, unsympathetic, evil guy, which is very much not what he did for the majority of his career. So people like found this and The Apartment kind of like distasteful when they would compare him to like the stuff he did on TV. I don't remember what the show was that he was on, but it was... He was like America's dad.
It was My Three Sons.
My Three Sons. That's right. Yeah.
He was just like the all American 1950s dad or whatever he was playing. I mean, he's been around forever, so you know, he was always in people's homes in on TV as the, you know, the portraying the idea of the idealist version of the American family man, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when you have two very different characters, like we talked about The Apartment before, where he's a executive who is sneaking off using the apartment of a lower employee to, you know, have an affair.
Yeah.
And then in this movie where he's plotting to, you know, kill somebody's husband is also not exactly the same. But
nice. He's awesome, though.
You got to give him so much credit, too, to, like, take a chance like that. Because at that time, I can't imagine there were that many actors that were going, you just did your bit, and that was what you did. Like, this these are wildly different characters.
Oh, yeah, 100%. No, yeah, yeah. He's just the best. I think, like, the thing that definitely stood out to me the first time I saw Double Indemnity was definitely that Raymond Chandler dialogue, which is very different from the Kane novels dialogue. Mm-hmm. Like, Chandler was kind of like, I think he respected Kane, but he was like, I don't think you can take Kane's dialogue and translate it to movies. Like, it doesn't play, I think, is what he said. So he amped up the dialogue a lot to a point where, like, it's now when you hear it, it almost feels like, I don't want to say parody, but we've heard this kind of, like, flowery noir dialogue done, like, elsewhere so much. I feel like this is kind of where it started in some ways, because, like, the dialogue in this is just so... like amped up, you know what I mean? Like it's very, very, like, I guess, expressionistic.
It's
it's wonderful, though. It's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. And the thing that's so cool about it also, especially after you just read the novel, is Chandler was able to take internal monologue things that he would be kind of thinking about in his head and turn them into dialogue that he would say to other characters.
Yeah.
And they would, I think there would be even times where he was thinking something and he would give a line that, because it was so good, he would give it to another character. I think there was a couple of instances of that too.
Mm-hmm.
So it still is the heart of the original novel. And even though he made a fair amount of changes, the whole spirit of the novel is fully in the movie. I think that this, adaptation is just amazing. Like, in terms of, like, best adapted, like, screenplay, like, this is one of the best ones.
Like, it's about like the best case scenario, I think, for adapting a novel to a movie, you know, where it's not 100% the same, but it creates, like, this perfect world of its own using the story of the novel and bringing it to life with, like, just the perfect casting, the perfect director to do the story justice, the perfect writer to make the material really sing on the screen. Like, it's just amazing. I could never say enough good things about Double Indemnity. It's just such a great time. So many wonderful bits and so many wonderful little touches in it. Like, it's one of those movies that gets better every time you watch it, I feel like. If you're interested in that sort of thing, you know, check it out. It's great. It's a great movie. Great, great, great movie. But
yep.
I think
highly recommend.
I think that's gonna be it for us tonight. So, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Lopes on Movies. We threw it together right at the last minute, but here we are. We're done. It's great. And hopefully next week, maybe I've seen a movie and I can offer a little bit more insights on something new. But maybe not. We'll see. Okay. Have a good night.